Welcome to Share Talk, the only podcast where investors come first.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It is Sunday, the 30th of May, 2021. We're going into a holiday here in the UK for people that are not from the UK, and everybody's on the motorway enjoying themselves there, including one of our guests, apparently. But I'll just introduce the regulars, Phil Carroll, Albert Arthur and Kevin Hornsby. How are you today, gents?
Very good, you?
I'm doing fine. I think I met you for the first time yesterday, Phil. Is that right?
The week? And I've actually got the probably the worst hangover I've ever in my life experienced. I feel like, you know, dog dirt, you know, really, really bad today. So, yeah, it was a great day, though, wasn't it? We had literally the first day of what felt like the first day of summer yesterday. We blessed the streets of London. And, yeah, it was a really good day, wasn't it? It was very enjoyable. I think we managed three different parts of London, you know, Bank Area, then we went to Mayfair, and then ended up in beautiful Belgravia, Elizabeth Street, beautiful part
that
of town.
That was very beautiful, but I'm surprised you have a hangover. It's yours, you know, 3 to 4 bottles.
I have a bad hangover, I think, you know, most people would be probably, you know, in hospital.
Yeah, most people be in hospital, though, yes, exactly.
Hospitalized, but I'll just drink through it, you know, and we'll get there. But, you know, no, it's been, and on the markets, it's been an interesting week as well. Not really done any trading, not touched any new stocks or any sort of traded any positions, just consolidated well. And yeah, it's been a strong week, so I'm not really going to mention any specific stocks this week because I don't feel the need to. But yeah, it's been a great week. One other thing I will say is I bought, and this is in private life, is as you're probably bored of seeing it now, Zach. So I was showing it yesterday to a few clients. Is I purchased a 1938 Austin Big Seven vehicle, and it's by far the oldest car that I've ever owned. And it is a true survivor. It really is. I'll show you a picture of it now on the screens, and you guys.
That is that Great Gatsby. Looks like Great Gatsby.
Can you see that, guys?
That's right.
Yeah. So it is a great.
Okay, guys. For everybody on the podcast, there'll be a picture of it on Facebook group, on thesundayroast.net, and on Telegram. So
what inspired you to buy that?
Well, it popped up on a local website, and it literally is round the corner from me. And I just thought, oh, you know, that's really cool. I liked the fact that I can keep it on the road and become the custodian. And it literally had the first owner bought it in 1938.
Is that Bonnie and Clyde, or is that, it's a bit after Bonnie and Clyde, isn't it? It's like
literally pre Second World War. So like he bought it, and then 18 months later the war broke out, and he actually owned the car for 65 years, which I find it, so that's the reason why it's still with us today. But yeah, it's a phenomenal bit of kit. You know, pull button, starts on the button, it drives like a boat, you know, it literally handles like a granny on acid. But it's super
granny on acid. I've seen a few of them.
You are.
We need to go to Ibiza in that thing, Phil.
Yeah,
road trip or gumball, maybe.
That's a gumball, yeah. But no, it's brilliant. And I've collected it on yesterday. No, nicely the day before Wednesday. So yeah, it was excellent. It is excellent. And I'm going to go to a car show in it tomorrow. The weather's good, so the safari window will be open. All the events will be open, and hopefully, you know, an interesting talking point. That's my week.
Very good.
All right, Kevin.
My week's been focused on trying to move apartments. So it's been interesting, to say the least. Today was a day's holiday today in Egypt, so decided we would have a relaxing day. So spent the day by the swimming pool and chilling out with the kids. So it's been nice. On the markets, took a pretty big position in NSCI, but I'll talk about it later. And I'll let Albert talk about the other good one that's happened this week. But it seems like lots and lots of potential in my portfolio at the minute. I was discussing before we started there that my portfolio on April 1, I'm down 4.8% in the last 2 months, because now obviously June 1 is going to be the next time the market's open, I think. So that's not good for me, but most of that has been through Zoetic. I think I would have lost around 20% or more of my portfolio if I hadn't owned Zoetic, or if I Yeah, so I'd probably be 20% up if I had sold Zoetic at that time. But anyway, I still believe in Zoetic, so all is good. So yeah, that's my week.
Okay, on to Albert, if he's there.
I'm not in the hot tub yet. I'm just getting my speedos on, getting ready.
Oh, no, the picture.
Yeah, this has been one of the, this is the best week of the year for me so far. The best week of the year. It's portfolio compression. You might have heard me mention over the last couple of weeks. I've taken three tranches in SNG because of what I said previously. I think that the COVID is going to come back and the market sentiment. And I think the markets at the minute are a game of chess. You've got to try and think of where the sentiment's going to go. And I did say 3 weeks ago, I think this is where it's going to go. But I mean, when you've got fundamentals like the SNG and you've got Operation Warp Speed in flights, trials in 56 countries, a self-administered drug that, you know, that's easy to administer and it's easy to pass around and transport globally, that's also got great efficacy, then I don't see where you can go wrong with the scope that my vision with the markets are that sentiment's going to drive it into a big COVID push. I see a COVID push coming. I sold half of my portfolio over the last couple of weeks. I've pushed it all into biotech pharma. I've loaded SCLP, and I think that's going to be one of the ones that goes soon. SNG, I was mentioning that I was buying at the pound range. I was buying at the pound range. I compressed all of biotech, all of minerals and precious metals. I compressed all of that and all of my SPAC. I compressed all of it into SNG just because the fundamentals were the same. And I've taken 5- and 6-figure positions in some of these. And today, I think it was 50% up in one of those larger positions, but I've not sold any. I think there's a long way to go. With all of it, I think within the next 3 to 4 weeks, what we're going to see is this Indian variant coming back in, things maybe potentially shutting down, and hysteria and panic that people are vaccinated. And, you know, and also I do think crypto is about to go toasted. I think it's going to crash. I seriously think crypto is going to go for a crash, and I think some of that money is going to come back into the COVID stocks. Well, that's just my, you know, market. That's the way I think the market's going to go. I'm not saying it's going to go like that, but I've done analysis and research, and it's going the way I thought it was going to go at the minute. I could toast myself. It could all go wrong. But yeah, this has been the best week of the year for me so far. And SNG, thank you. And I like investing in SNG as well, because it is, I mean, when you look at what's going on in India, you know, I feel like I'm part of helping the problem.
So Albert, do you know anybody who knows more about crypto than you?
I think we've got one of the top dogs on.
Have we? Are you sure? Like, because me and you don't know anything.
Well, we probably need someone that knows more than us.
Wait a minute, guys. We haven't got Elon Musk on this week, have we?
No.
He knows more about how to crash crypto markets than anybody.
He does.
I think we need to go behind the scenes, understand this blockchain technology, don't we? Who would you recommend?
I would recommend... What's the guy's name again?
I reckon the founder of Ethereum would be the person we'd have to invite on, wouldn't it, Zach?
It would.
Yeah.
What do you reckon, Zach?
Ethereum's looking rather less ropey than Bitcoin at the moment, so that's probably a good cue for that. So I believe in Ethereum. I'm not sure, not quite so sure about Bitcoin. But on to Vinay Gupta. I'm trying to give him a big build-up. I think I'm not sure whether we succeeded.
Hello. How's it going, Jack?
Welcome, Gupta.
I'm here.
Or Vinay, I should say. Vinny, where are you from originally?
So I'm from the border in Scotland. I'm half Scottish and half Indian, so I grew up in the north. Where it's freezing and wet and filled with sheep.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Which part of Scotland then? Right in the Highlands, or, you know?
No, right in the border. So okay. Literally on the border. 20, 30 miles over the border into Scotland from England.
Okay.
We're Scots.
Because when I first saw your name, what I saw now was not what I expected.
Yeah. You know, a funny story from early on in my career. I used to work for a video games company, and we got a call from an engineering house that we were working with, like, we're having a terribly hard problem understanding the accent of your Indian engineer. And we're all sort of looking around. Then I say, oh, wait a minute, they mean me. But I would get Indians calling in, right? And the Indians would be like, hello, I would like to speak to Vinay. Hello, it's Vinay. No, I would like to speak to Vinay, please. Yes, this is me. I think you could just hear their heads exploding on the other end. The rare to be found borderland Indian.
Yes, indeed.
Well, I was born in Glasgow, as you can tell from the way I speak. So, I have even more issues than you. Why is this person speaking posh? What, how does that happen? You know, sort of thing. So
very genteel for a Glaswegian. Yes, very genteel.
Yes, exactly. I still headbutt people and everything else, and I don't buy anybody around. But apart from that, I maintain many of the characteristics of a Glaswegian.
So, Vinu, how did you get into all of this? How did you? I mean, I'm a coder. I've written stuff in like Python. I've done blockchain. I've done it all. I've actually sat down with one of the guys that worked with you on Ethereum and done a hackathon.
Oh, nice. Nice.
I was pissed off that he didn't let me win. Our idea wasn't so good. I think they were working with a company called Electron at the time. And
I know
the
guys.
Idea was to get blockchain working in the using Ethereum in the energy sector. And I think Electron wanted to push for that. But we ended up inventing EV tokens, which is kind of what Musk and everyone's doing now, where you can kind of, they're talking about, you could charge your car on someone else's drive and get some format of token back. So what was the idea? Who inspired you? Where did you kind of get your idea from? And are you a coder yourself? I know there's like three questions there, but.
Yeah. So I'm a 90s vintage cypherpunk. You know, I was writing cryptographic applications in probably 97 would have been my first outing. I was one of the early users of a currency called eGold, which is one of the first digital currencies. I did a bit of defense-related crypto work over the years. And then 2014, I joined the Ethereum team basically as a project manager and a communicator. And I ran the launch processes for the Ethereum blockchain. That's the major contribution that I made to the crypto space. And then I started Materium, which is the other big contribution, which was basically started as a project to fix the legal ambiguity around crypto using contract law and arbitration. And then we worked out from that starting point into something which is basically e-commerce using blockchain NFTs. And because you've got all this additional security stuff that you get with the blockchain that lets you do e-commerce for very high value items. So it's a pretty meat and potatoes thing that I do for a living, but it's got a lot of unexpected synergies, shall we say.
I remember eGold. I remember someone mentioning to me that years ago, that eGold.
Oh,
and it was the first. Yeah, and it was the first one, and I think people had had it, and then I remember when the first Bitcoin came out, and I kind of saw it as an eGold, and then all of a sudden, bang. Was it 2016, the first spike? How do you compare this one to that one? Do you see similarities, or do you think we're further down the road? Are you getting more interest?
So, I mean, the first time out, even though the prices were high, the community was much smaller, right? 2016, 17, 18. Most of the people that were in the space were people that were relatively technical. They really kind of knew how things worked. This time around, what I'm seeing is a lot of people that have very little understanding of the underlying technologies that are involved. And that's both exciting because it means you finally crossed the chasm and the general public are paying attention. It's also a little scary because, you know, these are the people that regulators really care about protecting. you know, if it's nerds losing money and making money with other nerds, the regulators are a bit like, ah, those guys are grown ups, you know, they've all got real jobs. If you start seeing Main Street speculating on cryptocurrency, obviously you're going to get a little more action from regulators. So I think we're in that very delicate phase of mass adoption where you start the mass adoption process, but it comes with a whole bunch of regulatory strings attached.
Yeah, definitely. I think the thing, I mean, I really love the blockchain technologies and everything there. It's from, for me, it's the investor perspective and the kind of investors a lot of it's, I know it's not the NFTs, but with coin trading, it's kind of very binary, isn't it? It's up and down. But I think the NFTs, they're going to be, you know, a thing of the future, and your technology is used in the background for that. It's a similar sort of hash checksum transaction, isn't it, that keeps building on the blockchain. So what sort of things are you working on?
What we do, right, what my company fundamentally solves is how you sell real-world assets as NFTs. So right now, that's collectibles, physical toys signed by William Shatner in a vault, and it's gold bars. And about 20 minutes ago, I just discovered that we had sold our first gold bar. 1 ounce
gold. Congratulations. Bar. Well done. It's a great achievement.
One ounce gold bar went for 2,100 DAI, sold as an NFT.
Bravo.
So we're in business. That's amazing. We will take in a tiny commission on that sale. It's like, oh my God, we have revenue. So yeah, that's what we do for a living, right? You know, and the two questions that we solve basically are, number one, what goes into the vault, right? When the thing is put into the vault, how do we prove to you what was put into the vault? That's problem number one we solve. Problem number two that we solve is who's allowed to take it out of the vault again. And if you've got those two questions answered, you can handle pretty much any physical thing that you're allowed to put in the vault. Pretty straightforward, right? What goes in and who's allowed to take it out? That's basically what we solve. And then from that foundation, you can work with a much wider class of assets. Because once you've got this concept that you can work with anything that's vaulted, it means you can work with anything that has a custodian, and that also gets you a much, much wider range of assets, potentially some things which are not physical, like maybe some classes of financial instrument. So it's a very careful, painstaking build out of a system for basically melding together all of this wonderful world of, you know, NFTs and immediate transfer and escrows and smart contracts and all the rest of that, with the meat and potatoes reality of this gold bar in that vault is now your property because you bought it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, yeah, what's the involvement with, so you mentioned William Shatner there, I think, and I've seen his name mentioned on obviously, you know, in press releases. What's his involvement? I mean, obviously signing, you've got obviously the assets in that respect. People love signatures. They love, you know, the memorabilia and things. And obviously he's got the connection, the Star Trek connection. What is that? Is that literally he's going to be offering as an IP? Is the signatures and things like that on products?
Well, so what happened was one day I get a Twitter direct message from William Shatner. I'm like, yep. What? I appear to have a Twitter, what? And so I get talking to him, and it turns out that it really is William Shatner, and William Shatner wants to do stuff on the blockchain. Yeah. I'm like, what? You can't imagine how surreal this is, right? It's just like, Captain Kirk wants me to help him with the blockchain? Right. I mean, we're in nerd heaven here. Yeah. So it takes us a while to figure out what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And me and... you know, the team, we put together a package for Shatner of like, this is what you're going to do with the blockchain. And then Paul Camusso and William Shatner and I go to the Satoshi Roundtable, which is a kind of crypto event, happens once a year. And we go down there and we launch this thing of like, we have these collectibles, you know, the man has signed them. We put them in a vault, you can buy them. And everybody's like, whoa. And then the whole thing gets pushed back by a year by COVID.
Yeah.
So we have a year in which basically very little happens because physical collectibles, like this is a very hard thing to handle during the middle of a pandemic. So we spend that year building a whole bunch of other technical stuff. And then we relaunched the Shatner stuff this year, and there are objects being bought and sold right now on the blockchain from Shatner's collection sitting in a vault in Los Angeles.
Yeah. So is the plan to then bring on other celebs and other, you know, the signatories, et cetera?
Oh, there is just a river of celebrity stuff.
Yeah.
And I mean, where we are right now is, you know, this is sort of like what happens when you see the first bands putting up web pages. You know, do you see Marillion got a web page? Oh, Marillion got a web page. Oh, Iron Maiden has a web page now. And it's not that those web pages are particularly fantastic, but you know that in 2 years, everybody is going to have a web page and these things are going to have been massively professionalized. So, you know, it's like, here's a signed NFT. It's a physical object sitting in a vault. You know, William Shatner signed it. Here's video of him signing it. You know what you're buying. That today, what does that turn into 2 years down the line?
Yeah.
You know, crazy transformation is coming. But, you know, we have to accept that as the first mover in this space, everything looks a little bit wet behind the ears because, you know, I remember what the first websites were like. They were not fantastic. So yeah. You know, look at our NFTs. It's like, you know, you look at it, it's like, well, it's a Shatner toy in a vault or it's a gold bar and you could buy it on the blockchain. And it's a bit, you know, I always kind of get to that point where I'm like, is that what we spent 4 years doing, just this? Mm-hmm. And then it's that thing of like, yeah, but in 2 years, that's going to be a jumbo jet and the NFTs will be all singing and all dancing and they'll be updatable and there'll be special features and you'll be able to use them in video games and, you know, it'll expand into an entire ecology. Yeah. But right now we're just at that point where it's like, you know, you're cashing literally on the day we sold the first gold bar. So yeah. That's, yeah, we're just at that point. Really? And it's very exciting, but it's also a little bit like kind of humbling. Like, wow, 4 years and we sold one gold bar. Okay, you know, this must be the high tech frontier.
Yeah, and how do you protect against? Because I know obviously you've got, you know, some of these artworks I've seen have been selling for millions. You know, I think the first digital, you know, the JPEG went for something like 2.5 million or whatever it was.
70 million.
Was it? So how do you protect against copyright, like it being hacked and people, you know, people like to scam you on anything these days? How does it, I mean, obviously blockchain, you've got the whole ledger element of it and protection, but is it possible someone could hack these things?
Well, so remember the two questions, right? Question one, what goes in the vault? Question two, who's allowed to take it back out again? So you could get hacked by somebody taking a fake object and putting it into the vault.
Yeah.
Or you could get hacked by somebody sending you the credentials to get the thing out of the vault and lying. Mm. And the approach that we take to this, it's a combination of ways of doing things. It's a lot of due diligence. So we've got 4 people with curatorial experience as part of the team. So heavyweight curatorial machinery on one side, very careful use of the technology on the other, and lots and lots and lots of insurance.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for example, you know, I say what goes into the vault and who's allowed to take it out. What if the vault has a fire? Right? Nothing we can do about that. Nothing you can do about that. The buyers are now not going to get their goods. The only way of handling that in the real world is insurance. There's no way around it. So you have to think of this as like lots of use of insurance, lots of use of circumspection.
Just to get my head around it, when you say the vault is physical, is it because they're all digital assets? Why does it not need to be on it?
They're not digital assets. We're not doing digital assets. We're literally doing physical stuff. Right, as in,
it's physical net NFTs rather than an actual digitization of an artwork or a tweet or something like that. Okay,
the NFTs that we sell are the right to take the physical asset out of the vault.
Okay.
And that's a whole different domain. Like, nobody is doing that in the NFT space.
That is interesting. I like that. I didn't realize that's what you were doing. Physical NFT assets.
Physical NFT assets.
Yeah, right. That's brilliant. So I was about to ask the question as to... So I was thinking of NFT. Do you do virtual as well? You do dual? Do you do virtual and physical? Or are you aiming to go with a physical route?
We haven't done anything dual yet. So the way that I would do dual, and we've talked about it, we haven't done it yet, it's like take a prop from some movie where somebody's running around with a magic axe, right? If you buy the physical prop of the magic axe, how cool would it be if you could then take the physical prop and get a virtual magic axe that you could then take into a game like World of Warcraft and swing around.
Yeah, well, that was the bit where I was trying to understand, how would you own that, not as an IP so much, but how do you turn a physical asset into an owned virtual asset? And then, you know, because we were talking about NFTs previously, and there was that Earth 2. So just for example, if you had Buckingham Palace there, or even stars and space, you know, you could think, well, I'm going to buy the fucking moon. I own the moon virtually. But I mean, how do you take that as an asset and go, well, the moon's mine, I own the virtual moon asset? There must be some legal protocol process behind that. But I do like the fact you've just told me something new, which is a physical NFT asset. So how would that work? Say you've got a Lamborghini, mm-hmm. and I want your Lamborghini. Would I just buy the Lamborghini NFT, and then would I be able to just go and get in the car and drive off, or how would that work?
So again, the two processes, right? What goes into the vault and who's allowed to take it out again? Right. So we wouldn't sell your Lamborghini right off the street, right? Because it's far too hard to figure out what the condition is. It's far too hard to figure out who currently owns it. It's far too hard to manage the risk of somebody nicking it before you can actually walk over there and take it away. Right. So the first thing you're going to do is you're going to put your Lamborghini into a secure car storage place, and you're going to provide us with a ton of documentation about what it is that went in there. And that documentation will be framed as legal warranties, so that if you provide the documentation and it is wrong, you have to pay somebody. And ideally, you'd have 3 or 4 or 5 independent experts come around, give a certification, give an opinion, tell you what the thing is worth, and all the rest of that process. Step one. Step two, you've got the NFT, you've bought the NFT, you're the 35th person to own the NFT, you decide you don't want to sell the NFT on or keep it, you want the actual car. Now you have to go through the process of giving us the NFT, giving us your KYC, your AML, all the rest of that kind of stuff. And at the end of that process, we tell you where to turn up to pick up the car.
So it's basically an investment process with capital outtake. That's kind of what it is. You can turn the liquid asset into an asset. So it's theoretically, it's liquid asset via the form of NFT.
Exactly, right? And the place where this really comes up is, like, suppose that you're doing something like collecting baseball cards or Magic the Gathering cards, right? Magic the Gathering cards are currently changing hands for $500,000 each at the high end. Right? But some of those cards, they only function in specific decks. So I have a card and it works only with a blue mana deck, right? Really important in a blue mana deck. I'm playing a blue mana deck. That's my card. I'm using it. I want rid of that card because I've decided I'm going to switch to a red mana deck. I'm just going to sell this thing out. Now I want to get rid of the cards. So what you want is an ability for collectors to be able to buy in all the pieces of a set. And then once they've got the set together, it's worth more. But if they can't get the whole set, you want a liquid way for them to be able to get out the cards that they've bought already.
Right? I really like it. This is the best NFT thing I've ever heard about, because it's physical and liquid. I like it. It's cool.
Don't ask me what they're doing over there selling big gifts for $70 million, right? I mean, I found myself looking at that sale thinking, I don't really understand art, do I? But, you know, if Sotheby's says it's worth $70 million, it's worth $70 million. End of discussion. You know, why are the old masters worth so much? Well, I thought it was because...
It's demand and supply via NFT, a liquid asset takeout. So, yeah, whereas a lot of the NFT stuff at the minute, I'm trying to get my head around. I mean, I know you're behind the scenes. It's the blockchain. It's the NFTs. It's got nothing to do with crypto. And I know that my opinion of crypto, the way where it's going to go, and up and down, it's very binary. It's going to go down, it's going to go up. It's nothing to do with what you do. It's totally separate. But you're now putting a physical asset into an NFT, which is something I didn't know existed. So that's very interesting.
Yeah. And so tell us,
it doesn't exist. Extraction.
That's right.
So Vinny, how does this interface with Valerium?
Ah, well. So the underlying process, right, is what we're transferring is a commercial right, right? So you've got the vault, you've got the physical asset, you've got the custodian, you've got the right to get the custodian to give you the goods, right? So of those things, the only thing which is in the blockchain is the right for the custodian to give you the goods. That's the thing that's being transferred as the NFT. All the rest of that stuff is real world stuff. So if you've got some other asset which is being held by a custodian and can be transferred to you, at that point, it doesn't have to be a physical asset. It just has to be an asset that a custodian can hold. And that obviously opens up the whole world of financial assets. So Valerium have this very, very cunning plan, which is they're going to basically build out with us a system for taking financial assets, which are held with custodians, and making those assets transferable as NFTs. And needless to say, this is a dramatic step forward, because suddenly we're going from bars of gold and fine art to basically anything in the world that has a securities identification number, more or less.
So, and Valerium will guarantee that that asset is held by them then?
Just at this point, as if by magic, we have Richard Polden, who is the chairman of Valerium Blockchain, and maybe he can finesse the relationship between Materium and Valerium.
First of all, I listened to the back end of that, and I think Vinay rather undersells his achievements here. I think the creation of the Materium asset passport is actually truly groundbreaking. But the first bit, I'd like to get back to something that Albert asked about the crypto markets. I think the best way of looking at them is this is like a foreign exchange market with no underlying transaction. That's why it's so crazy. So you've got a market that within itself is very liquid, but the Forex market has a lot of trade transactions. It has a lot of physical transactions that underpin all of the derivative business that's going on. The crypto market has none of that. So most of the crypto trading, all whatever it is, $2.5, $3 trillion, $4 trillion dollars worth, is happening only within that market. Now, what we're trying to do at Valerium, and what we're doing working with Vinay, is to take fiat currency securities, ordinary shares, debt, put those in a Materium asset passport so that you know that the underlying security is there, and then put those out in an NFT so that you can then trade those 24/7 on the blockchain. Now, that opens up that the whole crypto market to a whole new trading area and actually gives the easy bridge into fiat securities. So that is basically opening up to financial markets the equivalent of another major stock exchange. I was hoping for a question there, so I'll just carry on.
I was going to ask.
I was just in shock.
Yeah, exactly. We're in shock. Dead air. It's called dead air.
I thought there was more coming out. So you know.
But I just can I make the point? I mean, is it true then that you've actually invented financial NFTs? Is that fair to say that you were actually the first people to invent financial instruments into NFT? So that's your, you know, world beater thing.
That's absolutely correct.
It's a new railroad, and it's a new type of asset class to trade in and invest in and just go and knock yourself out.
I would say it's a physical attraction to NFTs. That's what I would see. It's a literal physical object attraction to NFTs. It's a bit of a game changer. Something I need to sit down and drink some red wine and think about, because I'm a bit off the cuff at the minute.
You're right, Albert. But I mean, the crucial thing about anything like this is, does the physical product actually exist? So what we're doing by working with Vinay and Materium and the Materium Asset Passport is guaranteeing that if we say you are buying an NFT that contains 1,000 Tesla shares,
yes, I totally get it, because I work for a very well-known bank, and we are an asset bank. So when we have a treasury in the bank, mm-hmm. and from the treasury, for example, if we take a £10,000 loan, if we take a £10,000 investment, we'll take away what is called 10% cushion. And then for everyone that pays in, we take the cushion, but then we'll lend that money out elsewhere. And then, say if someone gets a car loan, someone puts 10,000 into the treasury. We then have £9,000. We take a £10,000 cushion. But then someone wants a car loan for £9,000. The people that pay in the interest will get 2% back for their investment over 2 years. But the people that take the £9,000 car loan will pay, 7% over 3 years. Now, if someone can't pay the car loan back, we've got the cushion. So for every 10 people that pay in, we've got £10,000 cushion, which covers the £9,000 car loan. However, this is where it gets clever. We've got the asset as well. Yeah. You're never going to die when you've got the asset, so you can reclaim it. And what stands out for me with this NFT token as a physical underlying asset is that safety guard of loss. And that's the bit that I like. So you have something physical under the hood.
You've absolutely put your finger on it, because if you have a 100 million of Bitcoin, I certainly know that the Swiss banks that will lend against various cryptos are asking for 600 to 800% loan to value. Now, that makes it very difficult, because you can't actually trade huge volumes of these cryptos if you want to switch them into fiat currencies. However, if we put securities on the blockchain where you can buy a bunch of NFTs, then somebody, Albert, could bring those NFTs to your bank, and you would know that there are the fiat securities that you can foreclose.
You could put bonds into NFTs.
Yes.
An absolute game changer.
Yeah.
And I like, it's just interesting, very interesting.
It sounds to me like you're bridging the gap. It sounds like you're bridging the gap between the major financial stock exchanges and blockchain and with the asset Ethereum passport, doesn't it, really?
But that's what we said in the RNS, where I said this is the bridge.
Yes.
Whether people are going to like that or not, I think some people are going to absolutely adore it.
Yeah.
And one of the important aspects of us is that we are a Gibraltar company. That's important because they actually, instead of just going gobble, gobble, gobble whenever they're faced with blockchain, they have an entire division devoted to digital assets.
Mm.
So they know what they're doing. They understand when somebody takes the product, as we did a couple of weeks ago, they actually understand what we're doing. So it's a really refreshing regulatory environment.
Good.
Yes, and Hassans know what they're talking about when it's offshore businesses, for sure. So
they do,
huh?
They do.
They do. Haven't had personal experience in the past, but anyway, tell me, Richard, how is Valerium and is going to make money from this?
Valerium is going to make money in the same way that that any broker makes money on a transaction passing through their hands. As we turn securities into NFTs, we will take a piece of that as it goes through. As they are redeemed, we'll take a piece of it coming back.
Okay, and have you any idea what sort of percentages that's likely to be, or is it going to be a fixed fee, or what's the likely
scenario? It's going to be exactly the same as Kevin, basically, as the power of a Rolls Royce used to be. It will be adequate.
It will be adequate?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take that as a you're not telling me.
You're right.
Thank you.
I'm not going to reveal our entire financial model this evening. I mean.
Vinny, would you like to answer the question?
Reassuringly expensive is always my preference, but
that's what I was hoping the answer was going to be. No,
I mean, look, you know, blockchain being blockchain, right? The expectation is these things will eventually trend towards global liquidity, right? You know, the crypto markets, they run 24/7. They're international by default. Everything runs all the time. And it's quite hard to get access to markets that work that way other than in crypto, which is not really what the people that are buying and selling things want.
I'm telling you what, I love finishing at 4:30. I'm not going to lie. I love finishing it, and I like not working at the weekends too. But yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, I've tried to trade the... I was waking up trading around the crypto. It nearly killed me. After 2 weeks, I had to just, you know, you can't just keep going. It burns you out. You can't stop. It's an addiction.
Oh, the way that crypto
happens, I'll be, you know, it's going to kill me if the markets are open all the time.
All the pros, they run 4 desks, right? You know, you just need 1 desk every 6 time zones, right? And you just have to hand off and hand off and hand off and hand off, because solo crypto traders, they just get killed in the middle of the night, or they never sleep and then they get killed up. Right? It's a game that requires teams in different time zones. You have to cooperate to survive in crypto trade.
I just want to ask Richard about Valerian the stock. You know, because we've seen the dot-com bubble, we've seen all the, you know, so the Bitcoin or the crypto bubble. In the dot-com times, you had companies which had first mover advantage, they had a USP, they had scalability, you had all these sorts of buzzwords, and it seems to me that Valerian, it ticks quite a few of those boxes, awful cliches, of a sort of a box of cliches, and it ticks that, which is another cliche. But you've got, you know, you are the first to market with this. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. The people are trading derivatives of fiat securities on the blockchain at the moment, but there's no guarantee that anything is actually backing those tokens that are being traded. So that's something completely unique that we are bringing to that. But I hope that we won't be the only one. I hope that this will be boom time rather than just us as the lone proponent. And I think that the big change that we've got here is actually something that Albert put his finger on earlier, where Valerium and Materium are bringing the physical assets into the crypto world and allowing them to change hands in the crypto world. They're giving those $3 trillion something to do other than just play with the currencies, which will actually, in turn, I believe, reduce the volatility in the crypto sphere.
So this could actually strengthen the crypto market, gives it some substance, let's say. It's not just hot air.
I think so. I mean, it's in a small way, but, you know, Dubai is expanding its... crypto efforts in the DIFC, they're snuggling up to Switzerland. As I put out on a tweet the other day, every time there's somebody in Europe or the United States that says crypto is dead, there's another part of the world that says it isn't and expands it.
So, Richard, just to clarify, let's say I have 10,000 Ethereum coins.
Yep.
And I want to cash them in. Okay, but if I cash them in, I'm going to crash the Ethereum price. Okay, so yeah. What is my option? I buy NFTs in treasury bonds. Mm-hmm. Let's say US treasury bonds, just to keep the dollar in the position. I buy NFTs in treasury bonds. I own those NFTs. I take it I own the interest from those NFTs as well, because I own the physical bond.
Yeah.
Okay, so effectively, I've just converted my huge portfolio of crypto into a nice steady income for the rest of my life.
You have, but you've also stayed in the crypto sphere because you still have the liquidity of those NFTs that you can sell to somebody else who holds a block of Ether or Bitcoin.
Yes, I understand. Or I can actually change that into fiat currency.
You could, although... crypto to fiat and is not that liquid. When you hear these billion, $1.5 billion, $2 billion trades, they're not moving that in and out of crypto that easily.
No, but if I was in that situation then, and I then wanted over a period of a year, 2 years, 3 years, that I would sell a proportion of my bonds, NFTs, mm-hmm. for fiat currency, I would be able to do this much more easily.
You would, absolutely right. Or you could pledge them to a bank.
Yeah, and they would give me the fiat currency based on the pledge.
Correct, which they wouldn't, they would do. Some of them will do that for Ethereum or Bitcoin, but they do it at a very high loan-to-value ratio. That's the problem.
And also, I've still got the risk then of Ethereum going down or Bitcoin going down or whatever. So I've
all this is about relative volatility, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, some people are in the market to buy more volatility, and other people are in the market to sell excess volatility. And these people meet up, right? So if you've got dollars and I've got ether, you know, I'm going to sell you some of my volatility and you're going to sell me some of your stability. So it works. But if we can do that transaction for a vast range of things, so gold, real estate, stocks, bonds, you know, asteroid mining rights, whatever it happens to be, then we just have way more market depth between the people that are selling risk and the people that are buying risk.
Yeah.
Right. It's just a surface for the transactions to happen across.
Like right now, there isn't, even if you've made literally hundreds of millions, if not billions on crypto, there isn't really a way out.
Quite right.
You are in crypto and you are a crypto millionaire or billionaire. But in the real world,
yeah,
you can't say there's a crypto.
I see it as a backstop. I like it. It's a backstop. Whether you use it for NFTs or whatever, I think the fundamental principle of it adds a backstop. Maybe that's what crypto needs. A backstop, a way out, a physical underlying asset, whether that be gold or, you know, something else, I don't know, or just an insurance premium.
Yeah, and
as you said, Vinny, the reality of this situation will ultimately lower the volatility and the risk in cryptocurrencies.
This is why, like, I started Materium, right? I started Materium specifically because I knew that if we didn't get the real world gateway open, there was going to be a real problem demonstrating utility in cryptocurrencies. So take an example, buying a house, right? By the time we're up and running to the point where you can buy and sell houses as NFTs, the simplest, fastest way of closing a real estate deal will be to buy an NFT for a house. So think of something like you've got a mortgage chain, something goes wrong in house number 3 of 5. You suddenly have to get a different piece of real estate in there. You take the money, convert it into crypto, buy a house as an NFT. You might have paid a few percent more for doing it that way because you were doing it in a hurry and they knew that, but at that point you save the whole mortgage chain and everybody gets to move as planned, right? Just that kind of capability totally changes the utility of crypto, because now you have people who are buying cryptocurrency specifically so they can do a transaction for a rapid house. And it's that kind of real world utility that will mainstream crypto at stable asset values into the hands of hundreds of millions of people. But until you have those kind of practical use cases, it's very, very hard to argue why crypto has value at all.
Yeah. Which is what we said on this Sunday roast a couple of months ago. It's like, I don't get it. I don't understand why crypto has a value, because it's just made up. This is what it is. People are transacting something that is like ether. You know, you call it Ethereum, but it's like the ether. Diamonds,
right? You know, if you think of crypto as being like diamonds for nerds, it's way more like diamonds for nerds than it is like gold. Gold has a very much more durable claim to be valuable than diamonds, right? Yeah. Diamonds, to some degree, that's a manufactured commodity. On the other hand, it also has real utility. It's kind of in this slightly gray area, in a way where gold is just, it's gold, right? And the comparison of Bitcoin to gold I don't think that's a great comparison. Comparison of Bitcoin to diamonds, not a bad comparison, right? Mm. But then you look at the underlying trading architecture, the software that underpins these systems is staggeringly sophisticated and outrageously useful and powerful. So all of this to me is about building the on-ramps to get more and more and more of the world's transactions running across these incredibly powerful and sophisticated software platforms, right? The currencies to me are largely incidental. The NFTs are largely incidental. The blockchain is absolutely fundamental. And all that we're doing is we're laddering more and more and more of the transactions up towards the blockchain where we can finally have a really serious global clearing system.
I mean, Richard, in terms of Ethereum, should we be looking at it or valuing it as something which is a new type of financial exchange, like a new stock exchange, a virtual stock exchange or virtual trading platform? Or should we be valuing it in terms of the future revenues that it might have? Or is it both?
It's both, Zach, because we are creating a new medium of exchange by structuring the fiat securities into NFTs. But also, it's almost like a new broker into a $1 trillion world.
So it's like Coinbase became bigger than JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs, or is the same size out of nothing in sort of less than 10 years.
Coinbase is indeed regulated as a broker dealer, as somebody pointed out to me the other day.
And so if all goes well, Valerium would be on a similar path or in its own sort of space?
I leave it to analysts like you, Zach, to make those kind of predictions.
All right, I'll check my horoscope and I'll try and work it out.
Everybody on the boards and everybody talking is that when this goes to the American market, they get this much more than we British people buy. This is the statement, and therefore they think the price is going to go exponential when it goes onto the American market. So, what's your thoughts on that?
I think it's absolutely right. I think the US markets do get it more than London. I think that's partly because you've got a lot of downward pressure in London with the FCA beating everyone around the head every time crypto is mentioned. You've also got, don't forget, Frankfurt trying to pinch as much business as they can out of London at the moment. So Frankfurt opened up to Aquis the other day. That's an interesting platform. We're going to list on Frankfurt as well at some stage.
Okay, good.
So as far as I'm concerned, as many platforms as we can get on, the more the liquidity.
So do you see an uplift from Aquis to the main market in London, if possible, at some point?
At some point, possibly. We'll see how the markets develop. I mean, to be brutal about this, if Frankfurt develops a better market for crypto-oriented companies, then we'll stay there, or we'll stay in the US. We're a Gibraltar regulated company, and a Gibraltar PLC, we can have our main listing wherever we like.
It's flexible from that point of view.
You do, so,
Vinny, a lot of people have been asking me the question to ask you. It's like, what do you think in the short term is going to happen with crypto in general? Because we've just fallen off the end of the log, and then got back on the log, and what do you think is going to happen? I know you've written some pieces on this, so that's why I'm asking you the question.
So until it's possible to use crypto, so let me put this a different way, right? Crypto is fundamentally a technology project, right? It's all about the software. Right now, the software is sort of in this freewheeling mode where, you make the tokens in software, you trade the tokens for software, it's software all the way down. As a result, the volume is enormous, but the value is very, very volatile. Because you're sort of making bets about the future. Crypto needs traction on the real world because the software that is currently running all these crypto markets, if you could buy and sell ordinary things, whether it's financial instruments or houses or cars or, you know, commodities like, you know, 100 tons of pork bellies or whatever it happens to be, if you could use that kind of software to trade those kind of goods, the world would be dramatically more economically efficient, like dramatically. So all I can say about crypto is it's going to remain volatile, right? And the threat of inflation in America can only be a signal that crypto's core claims about being a store of value are about to get dramatically reinforced. But it's all kind of up in the air until you start seeing hundreds.
There's another scope to it as well with the crypto. And I know Musk's touched on it because he's like done all his work, like giving back to the environment. But then he's ramped crypto and crypto's like done its thing to the environment. And he's realized he's like, well, you know, it's like, I think there's countries that produce less carbon emissions than cryptocurrency does. Whole entire countries that produce less than that. So I think that's why it's taken a bit of a back pedal. And I do think that with the crypto and with all of the green and the crypto like kind of merging into this thing, and I love the crypto and I think it's great. I want everyone to do well. I don't want anything to go down, but I just try and understand it from like a market perspective from every angle possible. And I think that the Musk has done his green bits and bobs and given so much back to the environment, but then I think he's realised now and the mining of the coins is, and it's going to take a little while to change that infrastructure. So for me personally, I think that there's going to be a bit of a backpedal. I think crypto is going to be great and it's going to do really well. But what you guys have got, the NFT, and I know it uses the blockchain technology, but it's not going to be mining away like a crypto coin because that's heavily traded, which is what uses the CPU and the RAM and, you know, the resources on the servers, which makes the servers heat up and get sweaty. I think what you guys got is very different to that. But I do feel that, and I'm sorry to put in because the question was to you and not to Kevin. But I do think with Musk stepping in and going down that green angle, I think that,
but he only did the green angle. He knew exactly what he was getting invested in.
No, I don't.
All he did was crash it.
No, I think his PR team told him what he's saved all of this and he's given all of that. And I don't, and sometimes, I mean, we're people, aren't we? We don't think of every angle. When you're like, well, I've done this for the Greenpeace, but, well, Jesus Christ, I'm mining all these Bitcoins and, you know, it's using more than an entire country. Yeah. Yearly,
but you know, what you'll find in another couple of weeks is Musk will tweet again saying he's buying back in because he's crashed.
No, I don't think he will. I think it's gone on a bit of a bear trap at the minute. And
Go on, Richard.
You seem to think Musk is telling the truth, because that would be highly unusual if he actually is.
Yeah.
That's a radical
statement. I think people are seeing the cracks and noticing, and you can't have, I mean, you know, you can have contrast, but you can't sway contrast for your own gains or, you know, to swing a market. You can't, if he starts swinging a market, he'll get toasted. So I think it's just been social media, a couple of miswords, and it's affected the markets, but I think he'll take a bit of a step back.
But I think Elon Musk is a very, very, very clever man, okay?
And he's maybe not so clever, else he wouldn't have said this stuff he did. Maybe he might be a billionaire, but I don't think he's very clever.
No, let me finish. He's producing cars that are detrimental to the environment at this moment in time, okay? For various different reasons. One, you still got to put electric in the thing. How do we produce the electric? We're going to need more electric. So the next number of years, 10 years, until maybe longer, until the situation arises where we can produce the electric in a green way, then these cars are actually going to be negative to the greenhouse gases in the economy.
Yeah, but let me finish. Bigger picture.
Yeah, let me finish. And the second thing is, all of the mining that is required, physical mining, to produce lithium, to produce copper, to produce cobalt, to produce all those things for the batteries, is not good for the planet. We're digging up the earth. So I think this whole thing to say Bitcoin is bad for the environment is like, no, don't look at Tesla, that's bad for the environment, because it is.
Yeah, and Kevin, don't forget you've got to recycle the batteries as well when they're done.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe in 20 years' time, the electric car's a good idea. But right now, it's causing the planet even more problems than if we stick to petrol engines. That's a reality.
Saying we only had horse and carts. You know, it's like saying we only had horse and carts. One man's got a car. We can't make a load of batteries. Well, do you want to be on horse and carts forever? No, we don't.
We can use the existing cars.
So, guys, the critical thing here is how quickly can we move away from massively energy-intensive blockchain technology, right? Ethereum started launch 2015. They're migrating off mining this year. So they'll go from the mined Ethereum to what they call proof-of-stake Ethereum. Proof-of-stake Ethereum will have about the same global energy consumption as a single swimming pool. Right. Which is not a lot in the grand scheme of things. It's more than you'd like, but it's less than you fear. Bitcoin is its own thing, right? The problem with Bitcoin is that they're very change-averse. They've been top dog for 12 years, and there's a huge, huge drag inside of Bitcoin where people don't want to change how Bitcoin works. But Elon Musk still managed to get all of the Bitcoin miners in America, the big players in that game, together for a summit meeting about Bitcoin and green energy. So what are you going to see, right? Solar-powered Bitcoin farms, possibly? Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, a lot of Bitcoin is hydro, they say. I don't know. I haven't checked the numbers, but... You know, you've got to remember, like, Musk's long game here is almost certainly to either get Bitcoin onto renewables or to force the Bitcoin community to go to proof of stake, which they will hate, but at least it will drag them into the 21st century. Right? Because right now, the Bitcoin situation is unsustainable. But all that means is that Bitcoin will change, or all the money will drain out into the currencies which are green.
Hmm.
It's not going to happen overnight. Bitcoin is not going to drain the energy out into those currencies tomorrow morning. But if they continue to be massively unsustainable while everybody else has cleaned up their act, the public will vote with its feet.
Yeah, and Elon Musk will provide them with the solar power cities because that's part of Tesla.
Did he do a thing like that? You know, selling
Bitcoin? I think so.
Solar panels and batteries so they can mine Bitcoin. I suggest that Elon Musk might be just doing this as a way of basically intimidating the Bitcoiners into buying his solar panels and his batteries.
I wouldn't dream of such a thing, Vinny, but you said it, not me.
Really, this is an education thing. I mean, we could probably talk all day and you'd learn more about, you know, you just learn about things about this area, because I think the main problem here is that people just do not know more than like 5% of what they should need to know in this area. And you can't get a credible source or a reliable source in these matters. Everybody's got their own agenda. So it's a really tough thing to get, you know, information from the horse's mouth. And hopefully we've got a bit of that today. So thank you, Richard. I know you were on the M5 and now you're not on the M5. Yeah. I'm sure you're rather drained from that experience. And, you know, thank you very much as well. And hopefully one time we can get William Shatner on as well to just talk about his hairstyle, which is something I admire a lot, given how little I've got myself. You know, maybe by the time I'm his age, I'll have the same kind of hair as he's got. But great to speak to you two, and hopefully we'll catch up soon.
Look forward to it, Zach. Thank you very much, and thank you everyone else as well.
Thanks for your time, Richard. Thank you for your time, Vinny.
Good times, guys.
Thanks for coming on. Thank you very much. Have a lovely bank holiday weekend, everybody.
Yes. God bless.
So what I'm really waiting for is Elon Musk's military vehicles. Yeah. Ultra lightweight carbon fiber tanks with electric railguns on them. That's the future.
Yeah. Could you NFT those as assets? That's the question.
Absolutely. you know, the tank division will go to the highest bidder. You could basically have like efficient markets for mercenary services.
It's interesting because, like, if you think about it, you're talking about this physical NFT assets, and what I think about is investments and things going up. So if you've got like a famous game or a famous like baseball player or a famous bowler or whatever, and it's like the end of a game, you could wrap an NFT into that ball.
And oh,
you could, you know, you could get it on the low, on the dip before they win. And then you could like, you could go in with the NFT, but that asset's going to go up. I see it as like a rocket stock, if you see what I mean.
Oh yeah.
That's where it gets interesting. You could even take in, like, once you go in with this physical asset thing, you could go into, well, that's not really a physical asset because it'd be a virtual ball or whatever, but you could kind of go into that gambling arena with it.
Shoes, right? So, for example, right? I mean, you know, Americans are crazy for sneakers. So you've got some game, right? And you get a contract with the team that you will take the shoes that are being worn only for that one game by those.
That's the kind of way I was going thinking.
So you've got this contract that says you're entitled to the shoes at the end of the game, right? The shoes of the winning side are going to be worth 20 times the shoes of the losing side.
Exactly.
And they could be changing hands on a liquid market all the way through that game as a future on a pair of sneakers, right? Now, I mean, look, it's not exactly my idea of a dream financial market, but I'm not going to turn around that business if somebody hands it to me.
But it's like movies. It's like, imagine the DeLorean off Back to the Future. Imagine if you could realize how big that movie would be and you could have the asset of the DeLorean, the physical one. And you could predict how big the film was going to go from your own analysis. And you could go, well, I've got the DeLorean. And everyone's like, well, what's the DeLorean? 20 years later, the DeLorean is worth a physical, you know, net value of like 20 million.
Absolutely.
What isn't there to like about that?
Auctioning off the props at the end of movies as NFTs is like third on our list of things to do right now. We are chasing that super hard.
It's just, I'm just thinking of ideas. I just like the fact that you've put a physical asset in an NFT and then your physical, well, if I was to invest, I would see it as a liquid asset. To me, it's liquid asset. When liquid asset is cash convertible, well, I'll just take it out, you know?
Albert, you'd end up buying that white Countach that Jordan Belfort, you know, had in The Wolf of Wall Street, all smashed up, you know, like, get you loose.
I would NFT
you'd
that.
Have it. You'd have it, man.
I'd love one of them. And the ludes to go with it.
Get the ludes. Send the ludes, dude.
Very good.
So, Vinny, your company is listed as well or not?
Not listed. No, we're just a plain old little startup.
So when are you going to list?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, I think it would be traditional to demonstrate some revenue before listing.
No, you don't need that. I mean, Elon Musk took 4 years to even get any profit, so don't worry about that.
No, I'm just talking revenue. Yeah. Never mind.
No, that. Even the revenue would be non-traditional at the moment. Just go for it.
the best valuations of the companies you can't value. So you're in that space. Just knock yourself out. Go for it.
Invaluable.
Go for it.
Well, no. The thing is, as well, is you look at the cannabis market, you look at the CBD market, you look at all these markets. I think with the NFT physical asset, that's what it should be titled. So people like me just know straight away it's NFT physical asset. If people know NFT physical asset, what you know is it's a non-fungible token, but there's a physical asset attached. That's how
NFTPA.
It just needs to be, layman's terms, NFT physical asset. As soon as you hear the word physical asset,
really good.
Then people,
really
good. Investors will get involved because there's a physical asset. I mean, they still will.
Very good point.
So, Vinny, if you want to take the company, let's do it, man. Yalla.
Richard has been encouraging me in that general direction, and I am absolutely willing to have those conversations.
Yeah, where do you want to list it?
I don't know where's good. I mean, you know, Zimbabwe, Mexico, New Zealand, what's hot these days?
Cayman Islands.
The North Korea. North Korea's got a burgeoning market.
That's got to be the one.
Anywhere south of the Mason-Dixon line, you know, that's going to wind up with its own stock market pretty soon. Miami Stock Exchange. Oh, yeah, there we go. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, in all seriousness, we would have to think very carefully about where we were going to put the company, because being a PLC doing crypto stuff in the UK, wow, that sounds like a lot of regulatory overhead.
Yeah, I think you've got to go down the same route as Richard, and you've got to register yourself as a Gibraltar-based company and then go for it.
Best of both worlds, right? Best of both worlds. Gibraltar has a lot of advantage.
I had a financial services company in southern Spain for a few years, so we did a lot of business in Gibraltar. So, I mean, it takes you out of the equation for lots of stuff.
Did I hear you say that you were in Egypt, Keith?
Kevin, yes.
Sorry, Kev. Apologies, Kevin.
It's okay. No problem.
He does look like more of a Keith, though, you know.
Don't worry. We all call it Keith when we're pissed off, I'm telling you.
No, I'm sorry.
Not winds Kevin up more than anything. People calling him Keith.
So I said, I'm talking to a Canadian investor who's called Keith, and I always called him Kevin earlier on today. So I'm like, the Keith for the truck.
Oh, it's bonkers. I mean, with all of this, the tricky part of it is there's just no separation between the assets and the technology. You know, if you're working with somebody like IBM or Microsoft, there's the technology, then there's a company built around the technology, then there's a bunch of financial services, people would take the thing public. And by the end of that, what's presented to the general public is here's a prospectus. With crypto, you've just got a bunch of nerds who have some technology, and then they drop a token out the back of that and it goes directly to the market. There's no interface. So you're just banged right up against the technical reality when you're trying to make decisions about what you're going to buy and what you're going to sell. And that is super disruptive to the way that things have been. And it's very, very, very hard on investors because there is none of this interface and there's no trustworthy information. There's just a whole bunch of raw tech. I mean, there was a time a couple of years ago when the serious crypto investors were reading source code to figure out which projects were going to work and which projects weren't. They were just sitting on the Git repositories every day reading source code, trying to decide whether these guys were competent or not before they'd place the funds. And that's just a different kind of grind.
Wow. We do our outros then.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so Kevin first, what are you looking for next week?
Okay, next week I'm looking to see the NSCI start to come to fruition. Net Scientific, incredible investment case now. Current market cap about 10.4 million. Current PDBS shareholding is 10.4 million. So basically, we're getting everything else for free. This was Albert's tip initially, so I'm stealing it basically. Focusing on a second level vaccine in Brazil, listed on the NASDAQ. That's what PDBS is. They have other owned businesses. There's a glycotest business, which they own 51.5%. It's valued at 11 million on old values. They also own, and that's to do with liver testing, I think, in terms of cancer. Proaxis Limited, they own 95%. It was a business that was born out of Queen's University in Belfast. Again, 3.5 million old valuation, fair value, RNS this week, which was very exciting. I mean, any one of those three, I believe, could be £1 billion or $1 billion companies. And the other one that they have is EMV Venture Capital Company, which this company has raised 740 million investments, I think mainly in the biotech area, and it's valued at £3.5 million. For a company that's raised 740 million pounds. It's bizarre. And on top of that, they have a few other bits and pieces, which is worth 1.2 million. So the total value of assets today on fair value, based on all of those things, is 29.6 million. Shares in issue, 15 million and loose change. So that would fair value the shares today at just under £2, £1.99. And they closed today at 71p. So for me, this is like, I hate to say a no-brainer, but I just don't see how this can't be re-rated, because the value of the stuff that they hold is significant. I will also post a video actually on the Facebook Sunday Roast page, and also on our Telegraph Midweek Roast. If you're not a member, join those. I'm going to put a video for PDBSB or SB, sorry, I'm pronouncing it wrong, about the three different things that they've got in terms of helping with COVID and different types of cancers. I watched it myself a couple of days ago, and it blew my mind, because they've got four different opportunities that could be worth between $700,000, $700 million and $1 billion in these opportunities. Now, maybe they won't work, maybe they will. But as Albert said when he first talked about this, this NASDAQ company was worth $2 a share. Today, it hit $12 a share. And I think it's only just begun.
So I dropped the bomb. I said in Share Talk 4 weeks ago, it was $2. And I said to everybody, check this one out. $2 a share. But the main thing is that the market cap of PDSB is actually worth less than their investment. The market cap of NSCI is actually worth less now. The market cap is worth less than their investment. PDSB is going to fly. I see it as flying. But they own 5.75% in PDSB, and that was what got me attracted, because with the way the angle that I'm going down, it's the root of the treatments, and with Brazil being heavily hit with variants, and the government giving PDSB £20 million to play with suggests, and they're going into phase two trials, and yeah, there's lots more going on. It's an investment holding company. Yeah. There's lots going on, but if it does the cap that something like Moderna's done, and that's, maybe it's unrealistic, but if they get orders and they create a vaccine, they're going to get orders. And if it goes through trials, you're looking at a 100-bagger, a 10-bagger in NSCI. The thing is, the only problem you've got with NSCI is liquidity. And the only reason liquidity is a problem is because the novice investors or the people trying to get in don't realize you can fill and kill an order. I mean, you can put it, you can't buy it. I mean, it's hard. If you're going over £10,000 a transaction, it's hard to, get in and out. And so you're going to get a lot of investors that are probably putting the 10,000 in, but to put 100 grand in, or, if you're going into 5-6 figures, it becomes risky because you've got the spread. You're going to take the spread.
It does, but Albert, there was an RNS this afternoon that one of the players has started to sell down. So they've gone from 8.9% to less than 5. So liquidity this week. Liquidity this week was held.
It was Schroeder.
Yeah.
Schroeder.
Yeah. Schroeder. So liquidity this week was very good. I was able to buy straight away every single time I bought this.
Yeah, they're under 5% because they've put some sell order in, and it's a work
that
sell
should positively influence the liquidity. Well,
they're under 3% now, I believe, aren't they?
Under five, so
they're under 5%. So I mean,
so this week the shares gone up by about 20%, I think, this week. And they've sold around 4% at least of the company. So that tells you something.
I think it's going to do very well. Past my algo of my thing, NSCI is going to do very well. But it's the kind of thing you need patience with. If you hold patience with that, you just whack it in there and leave it. That's the way. I mean, it's not financial advice for anyone, but that's the kind of way I'd play it. I just put it in and leave it. It's too illiquid. You don't want to be going in trying to get 10% out of NSCI. You want to go in and go for the big one. That's what I'd be doing. I'd be thinking Moderna cap, PDSB, vaccine, you know, it gets approved, you're going to get orders, you're going to get sales, you've got 5%, you're already bigger, you've got a bigger investment in the size of your cap. But the problem is a lot of people don't even notice that type of thing. And when you get experience investing, you notice that if an investment's bigger than a cap, you're going to do well. But a lot of it, there's a lot of new beers, there's a lot of, you know, well, not maybe not furloughs anymore, but there's a lot
but
of
a lot of people are also talking about glycotest within NSCI as well, that it's got huge potential, and also Proaxis as well. Both of them, from the point of view of they're both, I think, in stage two trials at least. And, you know, the chances of becoming financial payers are probably quite high.
Well, that's the best thing about these companies at the minute for me. It's like the wood lice coming out of the woodwork. You kind of like, you look at the piece of wood and you see the lice coming out, but you're just looking at the lice if you invest in that one stock. What you can do is you can look at what the lice have done to the wood. And that's where the fundamentals come out, you know, and that's where you're like, fuck, they're actually connected to all of these media channels. They've got these experienced people on the board of directors. They're funded, you know. How has this been off the radar? Because they've got shitty PR. So sometimes for me, what I found is that the whole COVID situation, maybe it's a COVID, and there's probably NSCI investors listening that might think, oh, you don't know anything. And maybe I don't know a lot about NSCI, but what I do know about NSCI is the fundamentals. It's the cap, the float, the products, the pipeline, and you know where it could potentially move quickly. And for me, it was initially a COVID one, but when you go under the hood, like I was saying, it's the wood lice have come out, and you're looking at the wood lice and you think, wow, that's a sexy wood lice. But really, when you look at what they've done to the wood, that's where the core is, and they're building something big. And that's where like SCLP are quite similar to PDSB. They're both doing quite similar things, cancer vaccines. And you look under the hood and you think, wow, I'm actually invested in an absolute bio beast here, and I've got it off a COVID angle.
Well, the final thing I'll say just about NCSI is that the thing that really I think got me a little bit excited about it was the EMV venture capital company that they have, because what's it actually going to do is it's going to present them with many, many opportunities to buy in to other new bio situations. So because the venture capital company is there, they're going to be presented with numerous different bio opportunities that they're going to be able to buy into at absolute rock bottom basement prices. So I think this has got some legs for the future as well.
Well, next week, I mean, short week, isn't it? You know, we've got a lovely bank holiday. The weather's improving. We spent the day in London yesterday with my friend Zach, and it felt like summer. We lapped up the sun. We were there, you know, mankinis on in the park, in Green Park. It was, you know, amazing. You know, we have women wolf whistlingers and everything. It was really, really enjoyable. Anyway, so...
they were doing that to you, man, not me.
Yeah. So short week. I'm not going to be adding any new positions because I'm a bit, you know, doing a bit of an Albert cliche. I mean, I'm happy with the ones I've got. I'm going to, you know, look forward to hopefully Valeria moving a bit, because I think people are now going to start to understand what it is and how, you know, how mind blowing it is. You know, amazing. What a great podcast. And Vinay and Richard were fantastic. And I think I'd like to think they enjoyed the experience as well. So that is something I'm looking forward to. Forbes Ventures. I'm expecting some news. I would have thought it would have come this week. I think the 31st is the deadline, so it will slip into next week now. But yeah, I'm expecting securitization news for that next week. And all in all, enjoying watching the positions consolidating and that. So Love Hemp did a raise. An institution wanted to build a bigger position. So that's good news, with half warrants. So that was good news, and there was an actual article that I just read this evening. So it's all getting generating interest now. And yeah, I just look forward to spending the weekend in, you know, spending the weekend in a bar somewhere, or, you know, you're driving around in the old Austin, because I haven't done enough drinking this week, Zach.
No, you just, I was just an aperitif.
Exactly.
Yes, in terms of Love Hemp, just to clarify, the reason why there was a half warrant on that was because the guys didn't want to pay all the money now, they want to pay it over the next 3 months. So it wasn't like, let's give them a warrant because we like them. It was because they wanted to spread when they were going to give the money. This is the institutional investors that were in it. And actually, Love Hemp has just re-rated. It started. The whole process is starting. The UFC's next week, as in the official start date of it. They're going to be white labeling that. That's going to be coming out towards the end of the year by the sounds of things, because they're going to be using this money to basically make things go faster. So this has obviously got to be a positive, massively undervalued, even on its current revenues. And it looks like, you know, we got stuff from Andrew when he did an investor call. He was talking about Holland and Barrett producing 60, 70, 80,000 pounds a week. They had in the RNS, they produced 86,000 pounds in one day. So these products are being sold. So compared to the other ones on the market that haven't even issued a single product yet and are worth 60, 70, 80 million pounds, we've got Love Hemp worth 30 million, I think it is, roughly. With this raise, maybe 35 million now that the share price has started to become a little realistic. I think we're going to see 4p next week, maybe 5p in the month ahead as news starts to come. So if you're not on board, I'd suggest you take a good look at it.
All right, folks, I think we've done nearly 2 hours today, which is not good if Phil's going to hang over, and maybe not good for anybody else either. So
I'm back.
Albert,
sorry,
you
want
to talk about SCLP and then we're finished.
No, I've already did it earlier. I don't need to do it.
No, honestly, you do.
I'm not going to repeat. Well, no, I've already said what I need to say. I don't need to say anything.
All right. Okay. So we say goodbye.
Thank you.
Have a bloody good weekend and enjoy yourself.
Stay out that sun, Albert, as well, in your garden. And I know you've been improving your garden and everything. And I just want to make sure that your pump's been fixed for your hot tub.
Yeah, I fixed it myself.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it was clogged up, mate. It was very clogged up.
You tempted me to buy one myself, like a hot tub. And it's like,
you need one. I'm telling you, you can get charting from your hot tub.
You don't need any more children, Zach.
You know what the best thing was, right? Good week on the markets. I sliced out a load of stock. I sliced out about 12 grand of stock. And then I was thinking, oh, man, I shouldn't have done that. And then my portfolio was 40 grand up this week. So I was happy because that 12 grand didn't exist. So I paid my garden off for free, but it doesn't always work like that. Sometimes it goes the other way, but you know, when it goes that way, you have an idea and it does it, enjoy it, but you just never sell too soon. That's the thing. But then the thing is, it goes the other way. I should have sold earlier. So, you know, that's why I thought, well, I'll take the punch. And if the punch is rich enough, I'll enjoy it. And that's what I've done. I want to get the CEO of FUM on, because I think if we could get the FUM CEO on and do a trial of their drug, and I could like use it on Jasmine, like she's up. I just think it'd like add, you know, a bit of something extra.
Dude, are you serious, Matt? Are you serious?
A bit weird.
Yeah, I'm serious. It's not weird. I could say, yeah, it feels nice when it goes on. You know, Jasmine liked it. I liked it. CEO approved. It's, you know, we do like a live trial of.
Are you turning to Hugh Hefner or what? Well, what's going on here?
I know. And hey. from the mansion,
we have Hugh Hefner has got nothing on. That's what you need to know.
You sound more like Liberace's rent boy.
Yeah.
I just think it'd be a bit fun for people to understand the benefits of FUM.
Thank you for listening. Remember to visit our website for more news and other podcasts at www.share-talk.com.